This is the Astrology University podcast, helping you find inspiration, insight, and connection through the study of astrology. And I'm your host, Tony Howard.
Hi, and welcome to another episode of the Cosmic Eye Pisces Season for Astrology University podcast. Today we have with us a very special guest, of course, MJM, Michael J. Morris. Hi, Michael. Thanks so much for coming on and co-hosting.
Hi, Vanessa. Thanks for having me. I'm so excited to be here and to share this time with you and to share this time with folks listening.
Me too. I'm really looking forward to hearing what you have to say about Pisces. We're both bringing a little bit of Pisces placement with us as well. So I'm interested in sharing that. So let's get into Pisces season. Pisces is transpersonal, mutable water. Obviously, it rules the fishes, and it's, well, in the northern, it's the coming towards the end of winter as the season begins to change. Everyone's running on vapors because they've run out of food in the larder, and if they survived Aries, well done. Whereas here in the southern, it's just been so boiling and starting to look forward to that change of season, actually. Yes, so everyone's waif-like up there. Well, not these days, but back in the old days. I like to think of the seasons like that through winter when we get to Pisces. So peak unicorn, I think Pisces season is interesting to tap into, and we'll talk a bit more about later Neptune going through Pisces and just visiting that larger cycle in this, you know, mini cycle when the sun comes through with, you know, the fantasy and the, you know, peak unicorn. I've been waiting for peak unicorn, and I think it's coming up, but we'll get to that. Pisces is very, obviously, the sensitivity and, you know, that comes through emotionally and artistically, of course. And, you know, I think of it as the doorways, you know, the artistic side is the doorways to that spiritual side and that blissful side. I do think it's interesting that highly sensitive people, HSP, has come along during these periods. And I think that's one of those, well, that's getting to that larger cycle, the Neptune through Pisces as well, that people are getting more aware of, yeah, sensitivity and vulnerability, and it's okay. And there's been a real spotlight on it. So this month may, I don't know, bring more of a focus on all of those things because the sun's lighting up Pisces. What do you want to share about Pisces? What are the standouts for you?
Sure. I mean, some of the things you already said are sort of, I think, essential for me in terms of how I think about the signs in general, but especially Pisces, that it's a mutable water sign, that it's traditionally ruled by Jupiter. It's the exaltation of Venus. It's the detriment and fall of Mercury. And then its triplicity rulers are Venus by day, Mars by night, and the moon is the cooperating ruler. And I derive a lot of my understanding of the signs from these basic factors of things like the triplicity and quadruplicity, or element and modality, its polarity, and then its relationship to the different planets that inhabit this sign in particular ways. And so my primary associations with Pisces are things like expansive possibility and adaptability. Its ability to move with shifting currents and changing tides. And I think that really lends itself to some of the qualities that you were describing in terms of profound capacities for sensitivity, for empathy and compassion and creativity. I think that's probably why prominent Pisces placements are so common in the charts of artists and poets and musicians and other folks who know how to follow the flow of inspiration and feeling. And that, of course, makes sense with Venus being exalted in Pisces and Venus having for thousands of years been associated with beauty and inspiration and creativity and the arts and different ways of creating things and bringing beauty into the world, which isn't to say that Pisces placements are the only signature of artists or artistic creativity, but it's one way that we can see those qualities showing up in someone's chart. Yeah. And as you mentioned, like we're both bringing some of our own Pisces to the table, to this conversation. And I have Taurus on the ascendant with Venus, my ascendant ruler in Pisces. And so in addition to being an astrologer, I'm also a dancer. My PhD is in dance studies. I'm a choreographer, a performance artist, a writer. And then my twin is also an artist who works across a lot of different media, including painting and sculpture and textile and perfume, just to name a few. And what I find so interesting is that not only are we both artists, but both of our practices exceed any single category or approach, which I think is really consistent with Pisces' mutability. In the ancient astrology, the mutable signs were often called the bicorporeal or the double-bodied signs, and they were indicative of multiples of things, multiple perspectives, multiple pathways, multiple possibilities. And that's really what I see encapsulated or described by Pisces, is this expansive multiplicity of possibilities, which we get from the mutability, from Jupiter's expansiveness and abundance and growth. And then some of these artistic suggestions that I think we get from the Venus exaltation. And then there's some stuff that we could think about in terms of Mercury's detriment and fall there as well. But that'll actually come up relevant to the lunations that we're looking at during this cycle. So probably that'll come up later.
Yes, I was thinking about some of those as you were speaking, Mercury and Pisces. Yeah. It's interesting, isn't it, that the mutability and the double sign, I was thinking of that as well. We both have Mars in Pisces the Taurus rising as well. Yeah. And yeah, the same, like I'm really artistic as well. I feel like I can apply my hand to most things. But it has the, you know, I think Pisces gets a lot of grief as well, like the water signs often do. And someone at Glamour, one of the editors contacted me about, she was writing an article on Pisces because she's a Pisces. And when she looks things up in just the general popular culture about Pisces, as she said, it just says we're always sitting in a corner crying. And, you know, obviously Pisces are incredibly capable.
Yes.
Maybe they do cry a little bit more, but they're also some of the most successful people. Certainly in my own life, my most successful friend happens to be a Pisces. You know, it has no limit at the end of the day. You know, it can be anything. It can just, there's no limit to achievement actually. And it's something to remember. So when we get to our classic signs, you know, I've used people that have achieved a lot just to kind of bring that point home. And yeah, I guess it's just showing how you use that adaptability in whatever situation and how that can be of benefit and also the pitfall, like every sign has.
Yeah.
So there is that. I love that ability to go anywhere and do anything and connect with any person. And that's something I've learned off said friend as well. She will walk down the street and connect with everyone, actually, you know. And I remember once standing, looking back, and some person that had walked past was still standing, looking back at her. She'll just, you know, connect with the entire room. And a lot of Pisces, just thinking of Pisces generally, do have that soft spot for art. They really do have that appreciation and that value on it, whether they're artists themselves or not. You know, I do see that more. There is that. They've just got that sensitivity, however they happen to be using it themselves.
So, well, and I think that speaks to some of the water and the way that, like, if we think of water as an element, it holds whatever shape, it holds the shape of whatever vessel it's in. And so that kind of like conforming, and not, I don't mean conforming in a bad way of like conformity, rigid conformity. It's a very kind of fluid conformity or changeability that we can see with that. And that responsiveness that I often associate with the mutable signs of being able to, like, I mean, yes, there's this caricature of the Pisces crying alone in the corner. And I mean, I don't think that's a fair caricature, but what we might look for inside of that is like, why might someone be crying alone in the corner. It's like, well, we're, I mean, especially right now, we're living through a period of immense global grief and despair. It's like, so this, these are people who have the capacity to allow themselves to be affected by the changing circumstances around us, which might be very different than, you know, like fixed signs or Saturn ruled signs, for example, where there might be less, there might be more resistance to that open responsiveness. And even as you were describing your friend walking on the street, kind of connecting with everyone, and even after they'd walked past this other person, kind of still looking back at them, there's just like, there's a kind of effusive atmospheric quality to Pisces. It's very diffuse. It's not, so Pisces may, the strength of Pisces might not be in precision or details, but it has this, the whatever planet is operating in or through Pisces may have more of a capacity to reach out and expand and fill and connect in this more, it kind of effusive atmospheric way that I think is really rich fuel for creativity. And also, as you were saying, people who appreciate creative practice, who allow themselves to be affected by film or music or poetry or dance or art, like there's a willingness to be affected. Maybe that's something else that I think is pretty strongly Pisces.
Yeah. Or like they can't help but be, and the mutability for sure. Like they're looking for, you know, looking for those different experiences and those vessels to feel or fit themselves around or respond to. So there is a, you wouldn't say active, but I do find, you know, out of all the water signs, they're more willing to go to a place, you know, and feel what that feels like and experience it. Yeah. And now what about the, there's always pitfalls, which, you know, I've been avoiding, but let's, in true Pisces style, which is one of them, avoidance. I've gone through a few pitfalls, but not too many because I think Pisces gets so much grief as it is.
Yes,
the avoidance and the escapism, they're so, it's a classic, isn't it? And all the ways that one can escape. And again, something to be particularly aware of because Neptune is going through Pisces for that special brand of escape hatch called binging. That we have during this particular cycle, addictions, escaping the harsher side of reality, you know, and I guess there's the victim martyr and the self-pity side because of the sensitivity and maybe not cardinal or fixed, you know, falling into a bit of a hole kind of thing. The psychic sponge comes along with having less boundaries, you know, and I think in a materialistic world, being not a materialist has its own challenges, you know, in a different world that was set up for the Pisces type that would thrive in a different way. Although, yeah, that said, like I said, you know, some Pisces are the most successful people also. They often have some Capricorn in there as well.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, the psychic sponge stuff is something I think these days very relevant too with all the media. There's a lot of, we're just getting bombarded with so many traumatic things that do happen in the world and always have, but we didn't know about it. And now we know about all of them and it can be quite overwhelming. So for not just Pisces, but everyone over this solar season, I think it's good to keep in mind, you know, really keep a gauge on that and, you know, do the psychic cleansing or, you know, cut the cords to things, at least to remove your attention and cultivate what you feed your mind or what you expose your psyche to is the way I think about it a lot. And just make sure you're not overwhelming yourself and balance it with also not just ignoring something that you probably should pay attention to. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, I think all of that is so rich. And maybe the first thing that I would add to it is just for folks listening that while we're describing these qualities of Pisces, we may or may not be describing you as a person if you have the sun in Pisces. So like we're talking about Pisces season, which we're marking with the sun moving through the sign of Pisces. But of course, and I love that you gestured towards the complexity of someone's chart. Like there's probably some Capricorn or Saturn in there somewhere. Then indeed, really, as we're describing Pisces, any number of planets might be operating through these qualities in your chart. It might be different areas, depending on the houses and things like that, of where you might see or understand these qualities operating. And so even if you don't have your sun in Pisces, you might be saying some things where you're like, oh, I recognize some of myself in that. And it's like, no, probably that has to do with where Pisces is in your chart or what planets you have in Pisces, things like that. And that because so much of my practice is actually rooted in the Hellenistic tradition, there's a lot less of an emphasis on the sun sign as the person or the personality, and more of here are the qualities that any number of planets or parts, areas of our life might be operating through. In terms of the pitfalls, you named probably the one that I associate the most with Pisces, which has to do with boundaries, that I think that Pisces might not be the most effective in terms of establishing boundaries or maintaining boundaries, because there is this kind of Jupiterian impulse towards inclusivity of bringing more and more in and wanting to include all the experiences, which can make it very difficult to know here's where my sense of self ends and my sense of other begins. It can also make it more difficult to determine what experiences or feelings are actually good for me. So even as you were describing the kind of discernment to exercise in terms of what you expose yourself to, I think sometimes in Pisces parts of our lives, Pisces parts of our charts, there can be this tendency of wanting to experience all of it. And some of it might not always affect us in the best way. And so especially as we're moving through Pisces season, this could be a good time to exercise some of that discernment. And maybe even if, especially if boundaries feel difficult, we could use something like intentionality. What do you want to invite into your attention? What are the shows or the films that you want to be exposing yourself to? Where can you follow some desire and find what's satisfying rather than simply absorbing all of it in ways that may actually be challenging or even detrimental to you in some sense, which, you know, could align up with some of the astrology that we're seeing unfold during this period as well, during this Pisces season.
Absolutely. And I'll just reinforce that too. It's that archetypal energy that we're talking about. And it's a thread of many threads. So, yes, you know, we've got to start somewhere. So we pull on that thread and each month focus on one as the sun goes through. So, and yes, good point, Michael. It's lining up a particular area of your chart, even if you have no planets in Pisces, and it will be aspecting, you know, as well. And like, I'm a modern astrologer, so I do use Neptune quite heavily. So, you know, it could be you have a strong Neptune placement too. It's going through Pisces at the moment. And then people with 12th house planets might relate to a few little different things in various ways that may or may not be similar. So, yeah, it's definitely, it's full of different flavors, isn't it? It's so true, which makes it all the more fascinating, thankfully.
Yeah.
So things to do in Pisces season, it's particularly perhaps in the area of your life where the sun is going through at the moment.
Yeah. I mean, go ahead.
No, you go.
I was just thinking, I mean, the first things, it's kind of like, not to be repetitious, but it's what I associate with this period or with this part of this, these qualities of Pisces, is spending time dancing or reading poetry, whether it's for yourself or to someone you love. Like that could be a beautiful Pisces practice, reading poetry to someone you love this season, listening to music, moving to music, connecting to art that, not just any art, but art that carries you somewhere elsewhere, like transports you in some way. And then maybe even making art, exercising your creativity, even if you're not someone who thinks of yourself as an artist, that there's actually, I think, some good reasons during this Pisces season to explore forms of, we could use the word expression or articulation that exceeds language, that goes beyond the verbal. Like how would you give expression to something that we might think of as ineffable, something that cannot be put into words, which actually could be very relevant to this Pisces season, especially the full moon, which we'll talk about. And so whether or not you consider yourself an artist, exploring ways of modes of expression, modes of articulation that are other than linguistic forms of speaking, writing, things like that, could be great for Pisces season. All that exposure to art could really support you in that. And then the other thing that I was thinking about, this will be a little bit more abstract, but it's actually the invitation that I would want to make to people is as a thing to do in Pisces season is to soften your edges and allow yourself to blur some of the lines of your own sense of self. Mm-hmm. Allow yourself to flow in some new directions and maybe even exploring the parts of yourself that exceed the available language and categories that we've received from, you know, all of our social conditioning and social norms, to give yourself a chance to kind of feel into those more expansive places. Because I think all of us are already more than we think we are, and already so much more than what we've been told we can be. Mm-hmm. And Pisces season is a really lovely time to explore some of that.
Absolutely. I like that gold star, that one. That's the big takeaway in my mind, actually. That is the big takeaway. It's the diffusiveness. You know, you can apply it to your ego, sense of self, the sun. And just let go of some of those, I think, limitations without completely unraveling. That's the other side of it. So on my list, I had lose yourself, and yeah, through music, through dancing. I think it's interesting that over this period of Neptune through Pisces, the cosplay stuff has just gotten huge, and you've got the just mainstream regular people get to dress up and be in character and walk and talk in different ways than they normally would without it threatening their identity or their sense of self. And therefore then maybe built taking some of those things that they learn by doing that, you know, which is usually reserved for artists, and artists get to do it, but regular people haven't, and they have now. And I think that is quite fascinating about these times. And this month really has such a focus on Pisces and Neptune, and yeah, like it's a great time to step into character. It's a great way to step aside, like invite the muses is like stepping away from your identity and the sun and the limits of who you think you are. That also keep you sane, which is helpful, but you know, you can have that clear step aside. So yeah, try, I don't know, have a costume party.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and I love that. I mean, this is one of the beautiful things of getting to be in conversation with people who practice overlapping but different versions, different traditions of astrology, is in addition to the kind of Neptunian side of losing yourself in Hellenistic astrology, the ruler of Pisces is Jupiter. And so this whole time that the sun is moving through Pisces, Jupiter's in Pisces. And so Jupiter, which is one of the most supportive planets in the sky, sometimes called the greater benefic, is in its own domicile, where it has access to all of the resources it needs in order to accomplish what it's trying to do in your chart and in your life. And so whatever is going on with this sense of softening the edges of the ego or losing some sense of self, it feels like there's some cohesion to it. It's like there's support for you to be able to do this. Like, yes, you can soften and explore some of those other ways, whether it's through a costume party or cosplay or exploring some of your fantasy life in various ways, whatever that looks like for you, knowing that there's a lot of support to kind of hold you together in the process, that because Jupiter is there kind of ushering the sun through its sign. And so we get both of those stories, whether we tell it with the Neptune rulership or the Jupiter rulership, and then seeing how they fit together, how we can explore how the one actually creates some support for the other in some sense, if that makes sense to folks.
I think it will. Yeah. It's so extreme with both, whichever kind of astrology you practice, we're all on the same page with this one. That's, I think it's peak unicorn. It's here this year. All right. So that sounds like good times to me with my Mars in Pisces. So we're up to the classic signs. Would you like to talk about your classic sign first?
Sure. The person that I was thinking of in terms of who I just really think embodies a lot of the qualities of Pisces that we've been describing is Kate Bornstein, who is a transgender pioneer, an author, a performer, and has just been a real guiding force in terms of exploring and understanding gender in more complex ways that diverge from the heteropatriarchal norms of the binary or compulsory heterosexuality and things like that. And she has her sun and her ascendant in Pisces. And so, and reading with whole sign houses. So then her sun is right there in her first house with her ascendant. And that really concentrates, I think, a lot of these Pisces qualities into her sense of who she is, but also then how she radiates that out into the world, how she shows up in the world. And I was reading back as I was preparing for this episode, I was reading back through a lot of her books. Like she wrote this really amazing book called Gender Outlaw, Men, Women, and the Rest of Us, which is really her kind of first book of contribution to gender theory. And then also a memoir called Kate Bornstein is a Queer and Pleasant Danger, which is just a really thorough understanding of her life. So if you're like, I mean, if you're studying, you know, charts, it's good to it's so lovely to have a memoir, to have an autobiography, to kind of understand someone's chart through their eyes. But actually the quote that I wanted to share comes from her bio on her website, her current bio, which she has up on her website right now. And I'll just read this little part of her bio. She writes, "Since 1989, trans trailblazer Kate Bornstein has, with humor and spunk, ushered us into a world of limitless possibility through a daring re-envisionment of the gender system as we know it. Today, Kate identifies as non-binary, not a man and not a woman, and she's been writing about non-binary gender identity for nearly 30 years. In 1984, she began her hormonal, surgical, and social transition from male to female, which she completed in 1986. She was a woman. In less than 2 years, she realized that being a woman was for her no more than acting and pretending, just like it had been for being a man. So in 1988, Kate gave up the idea of being a woman, and now she lives on the edge of paradox. She is not a man and not a woman. She looks beyond the gender binary to see gender as both a conscious practice and a playful journey," end quote. And I love this so much, not only as a, like as a non-binary person, do I resonate and understand myself a lot through Kate's work, but I love how this reflects that Pisces potential of limitless possibility beyond rigid or static systems like the gender binary. And even her lived experience of living in and through more than one gender and these various phases of change and transition and adaptation that came with self-realization or or recognizing herself more, that I was assigned male at birth and I'm not that. So I'm going to transition to female, and having fully done that, realizing I'm not this either. So what space is there for me? And really being one of the people pioneering space beyond those two categories. Of course, there's always been people who live outside of these categories for thousands and thousands of years. This isn't a new thing, but we're developing new language, new understanding of it. And Kate was really a pioneering force in bringing more awareness and more understanding to those spaces beyond the gender binary of female or male.
And Kate's so good at expressing experience in words as well. You know, it's such a gift. I think I love that too. I read through that quote and I was like, yes, nailed it. Because I think it's so Pisces too. It's so great that a Pisces is able to do that. And I think of, you know, with the gender binary, where it's like we're all swimming in the water. We until you get out of that. And I do think that's a really interesting experience for trans people to share back, that have had that experience of being in one lane, like a clear lane, and then going in the other lane, like still binary. But trans friends that I've had in the past and worked with, I've just been like, that is fascinating. Of course, like, tell me your experience, because I've got experience of one side here, and it's, you know, it's a lifetime's work to liberate myself from that. But when you've really clearly experienced both, you can see the walls like so much clearer, I do believe. So yeah, I love that quote. And I love that Kate pointed out that it's like performing, you know, and that's been quite a new thing as well. And a great, like, I've really appreciated having those words or that way of saying performing femininity or performing masculinity. And it's that alone out of this whole period has probably helped me to grasp things the most, you know, because I want to be a free and liberated person. And I haven't appreciated the box that I've been in lots of ways as well. And yeah, having the language is everything. Mm-hmm. And being able to spot where those walls are when you've just been in the same water your whole life, you know, like a fish, you know, they always use that saying, like, it's like in the fish is in the water, you can't tell the difference. You dyed in the wool, or the wool is dyed dyed with the wool, whichever way that goes. Yeah. So very interesting. I'm quite busy for the next month, but I'm really looking forward to checking out Kate's work. I didn't know. Mm. Yeah. So thank you for that.
Of course. I mean, the books I mentioned, Gender Outlaw, Men, Women, and the Rest of Us is an excellent starting place in terms of familiarizing yourself with Kate's work. There's a great documentary about her that's by Sam Fader, and the documentary is titled after her memoir, Kate Bornstein is a Queer in Pleasant Danger. Or maybe the film is just called A Queer in Pleasant Danger. I can't remember. Excellent film, just in terms of watching her and hearing her voice and getting a sense of her growth over all these years, and her talking with other people in her friend groups, her family, her partner, things like that. She has a great book called The Gender Workbook for people who are like figuring out gender and kind of like wanting to think about gender in new ways. And then she's also wrote a book that I can't remember the title of it off the top of my head, but about suicide and suicidal ideation and surviving suicide, surviving suicidal ideation, which has also been like a big part of her journey as well. And it's so exciting to hear you talking about wanting to be a liberated human being and wanting to kind of experience yourself outside of the kind of rigid roles and categories that we've been given. And I think that one of the things that we learn from the experiences of trans people is the complexity that's actually already in all of our gender journey. So like even something as simple as, we're all very clear, I think, in our society that a girl and a woman are not the same thing. Like, and so like even having been a girl and having become a woman, already there's a kind of gender transition there, that your gender has changed in some sense.
People look at you differently.
Exactly. And because, to the extent that, and I mean, this is my bias in terms of my academic training in gender theory, but to the extent that gender is fundamentally a social phenomenon, it's never simply only something we'd give ourselves.
So social.
It has everything to do with how we are understood and assessed, and the roles and expectations that are given to us by other people, that as we all move through our lives, as we age, as we change, whether or not we ever change the words we use for ourselves of like, I am no longer this gender, I am something else, that our genders were never static. None of our genders were the same thing from beginning to end. And that gives us all hopefully a little bit more room to breathe, like a little bit more room to move and to, yeah, find something like something more authentic in terms of who it is that we're here to be. That we don't only have to perform these roles as they have been given to us, that we have, which doesn't mean we just get to throw them off either, because I actually don't believe that's possible, but we get to find room inside them. We get to explore the spaces where there's ruptures or breakages or cracks in the walls and find how we can move through or beyond some of those places.
Definitely.
And I think Kate leads the way. Yeah.
Definitely. And I think also our own perspective, you know, the more that we can liberate other people, the more we also liberate ourselves. It's a nice feedback loop, and see those parts of people that you wouldn't normally see because they're not fitting into, you know, the perspective that you're projecting onto someone else. I find that's a big part of my personal journey as well. Like if you don't allow yourself to be everything, you're not going to allow someone else to be either.
Right. Yeah. Mm. Agreed.
Sorry, I like that one. So my classic signs are, I have two actually, Simone Biles and Amanda Gorman. They're both born a year apart, within a year of each other, basically. So around the same age. Of course, Amanda Gorman, she is a poet. So I thought that was pretty classic Pisces. And she shot to fame or mass awareness as she read the poem at Biden's inauguration in 2021, early 2021. Mm-hmm. And I just thought, oh, Pisces, I wonder if both of these people had Neptune coming through at the time, because looking at history and Neptune and famous people that really embodied the decade, invariably Neptune was passing through their sun or major personal planets, usually their sun. Mm. So I'm like, I bet this Neptune was around her sun. And sure enough, yes, Neptune was conjunct her sun. So I thought that was really interesting. And, you know, she really, you know, just hit something in the collective. And I think that's what that Pisces and Neptune can do. They can, it can get in, you know, it can break through. And she certainly did do that. So I thought that was interesting. And of course, she is, you know, advocating, you know, using her, like she's hitched her wagon basically to those higher ideals, which is the key. And so has Simone Biles. You know, she, of course, has shot to fame as the GOAT gymnast of all time, the most amazing gymnast of all time, the most decorated. She's just so far ahead of anyone else. And that's where I think, again, here's a Pisces that is just the not just the top, but she's like, people can't even get close to her. There is no boundary, it seems, on what she can achieve. It's like the impossible. She's achieved the impossible. And again, she has then sort of like sacrificing the self or being that larger thing where she is advocating for other people and sharing her story in a way that seeps in and does affect people. Like we can all share our story, but not all of us can hit that mark with the collective. And for her too, Neptune passed, I think it was with her Venus, and now it's still around her sun and it's still got to go through a few more planets of hers. So I think there's more to come with her as well.
Exciting.
Yeah. So I thought those two were really interesting as Pisces. And I think Simone as well, you would think what she's doing, she's so like strong and muscly. You would think, oh, she would be more of an airy statement. But again, it's like, you know, people do their thing in their way in whatever field it is. So yeah, how she's done it and what she's done with it. So then I did have a couple of quotes. So for Simone Biles, she's got plenty of very positive and very American, like you can do it. quote, she's got Sagittarius rising. So it's, it fits with that cultural positivity. Yeah. And she says, before you can achieve, you must believe in yourself. You are more capable than you think. So that, you know, there's no limit. Open it up. And Amanda, I've taken the end of The Hill We Climb, which is the poem that she shared at the inauguration, the end of that. There's always light if we are brave enough to see it, if only we are brave enough to be it. So I think that kind of goes with the moons that are coming up too, like bringing Saturn in and, yeah, being that vision on Earth, like making something tangible of it. Stepping into something yourself again, that like you're not static, you're not in a box, you can be so many things, which Pisces out of anyone, I guess, would understand that.
Totally. I mean, like so much about like expansion and growth in both of those quotes and both of these women, and how much space they're opening up, not only for themselves, but for other people too. Like
in I think so many that ways,
feels really clear.
Yeah. And lots of levels as well. It's true. Oh, it's so lovely to see. So monthly moons, we're up to the monthly moons. So the new moon is March 2nd, and that's at 12 Pisces, March 2nd Eastern Standard Time. It is going to be conjunct Jupiter with an orb of about 2, sextile Uranus with an orb of around 1. And it looks really great, except there is this, and I don't use semi-squares and the smaller aspects so much, except this one is making a real statement. Mercury, Mars, and Venus are at an orb of 0. So it's quite intense. I'm just going to go look at the chart. So, sorry, Pluto, Mars, and Venus.
Right.
Yes.
Yes, because this is like the day before Venus and Mars make their conjunctions with Pluto.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they're
basically definitely in the air. That's definitely part of the, what I might think of as like, even I don't work with those aspects, but I would still say that this is part of the quality of the moment that the new moon is initiating, that even though even if I wouldn't look at those planets as in aspect with the new moon, it's part of what's in the air as this kind of initiation of this lunation cycle happens. And so it's part of what we're going to be dealing with is that really close proximity between Mars and Pluto, Venus and Pluto, Venus and Mars. Actually, the asteroid Vesta is really close to those conjunctions as well. So it's like there's a lot going on over around Pluto and Capricorn at the same time as this new moon.
It's so true. And I do notice it, like I do notice it even in people's charts, the semi-squares, yeah. Even though I say I don't use it, I take note if it is, I do still take note.
Yeah.
And just see what happens. I feel like it expresses in like a, you know, someone jabs you with their elbow. That's how I feel like it expresses. Like they've just got to get this thing out. Then it doesn't come out smoothly. It's not like the square, but it's just like, it's just got to release that, you know, whether it's Mars, Venus, whichever it is. Do you use Pluto? You probably don't.
I do. Yeah. No, I do use the outer planets, but I only use them when they're in close aspects, primarily conjunctions, but other aspects with the visible planets. So I kind of treat them in the same way that I do the asteroids, that because we can't see them visibly, that they need to be contacting something that we can see in order to kind of get pulled into the chart.
Yes.
And Pluto is absolutely getting pulled into the chart right now at that new moon on March 2nd. So yeah, Pluto is a big part of the story for me in that new moon, but also the next day on March 2nd. In general, I feel really good about this new moon because it is in Pisces.
It's got Jupiter on its side.
Exactly. It's right on top of Jupiter. It's Jupiter's ruling the full moon, the new moon, obviously. And then they're also in Jupiter's bounds, which just give Egyptian bounds, which are the bounds or terms that I use. So there's just like this really expansive and hopeful quality with a lot of support, I think. And then of course it's co-present with Neptune and in that sextile with Uranus that you mentioned. Yeah. So there's kind of like, I don't know, I was thinking about like, it's a time for big, beautiful, revolutionary dreams and for visioning this kind of like, if like it's the dark moon. So it's like things aren't visible yet, but like visioning and dreaming and fantasizing about the kind of possibilities or change that we can imagine. And so like for someone, if people are the kinds of people who work with the new moons as times for setting intentions, there's a lot of support for whatever intentions you set at this new moon, even though there is also this story unfolding at the same time with Mars and Venus and Vesta applying to Pluto, which could be, I mean, part of the way I'm reading that, which is part of this longer Venus Mars story that we might talk about, is like there's this kind of, especially with the conjunction with Pluto, this kind of digging down into the depths of intensity or down into some of the things that have been, you know, hidden or buried, especially related to our desires or our pleasures, or perhaps the ways in which our desires and pleasures have been repressed or suppressed in some way. The presence of Vesta there is actually kind of interesting to me because of the many things that we can associate with Vesta, that she was the goddess that was invoked in relation to all ritual. And so this could actually be a nice, a potent time for ritualizing some of these things, maybe even doing some rituals focused on the uncovering and recovering of hidden desires or even something like the satisfactions that we deny ourselves or that have been denied to us in some way, that if people are interested in setting some intentions or ritualizing some intentions around this time, that's part of the sky. That's part of the atmosphere that's happening during this new moon.
I'll agree. It's like, it's really strong for manifesting. Like it's like the ultimate sign for manifesting, I think, is Pisces. And then you've just got Jupiter in there. Fantastic. Right. Uranus, you know, helping to get you out of the box, but still in Taurus. So for some a tangible side. And I like that with a ritual. I think grounding it in something tangible will help take care of the semi-square being an, you know, coming in from Earth as well. It could be a way to speak to that or invite it in so it doesn't trip you up. Maybe I see the semi-square as a bit of an undertow as well, since we're talking about the water, an undertow. So just be aware of it. And yeah, like you were saying, repressed, I'm thinking with the Pluto, maybe things that you feel are maybe taboo. So just feel into yourself about, even if you do your intentions and think, you know, apply some restriction or rules to that. Why are you doing that? Like that will reveal the wall for you of what you think is beyond your personal pale, which might not be, you know, with Pisces and Jupiter and Neptune and Uranus, there's the sky's the limit, really, you know?
Yeah.
So maybe realizing where you restrict yourself and apply rules, or it might be actual rules because you can't go to certain places. Like maybe you can't go discoing at the moment because you don't have a green tick on your pass, you know, depending where you live, which is where I live. That's the case. Unless you cross the border in 20 minutes, you know, there's a border and then everything's open to everyone. It's just, it's, it's weird. It's quite weird. So yeah, it's an interesting, this one, but I feel like if you take it on board, if you speak to it, if you invite it in, it could actually be quite useful. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of there to let you know something.
Yeah, there's a lot of potential here, I think.
Yeah, very beautiful. It could be, you know, with the Capricorn, you might just be escaping, but you've actually got a bit of extra work to do that. Mm-hmm. You should probably do that first and then, you know, do your escape. So the full moon is March 18, and of course that's in Virgo at 27 degrees. It's going to be conjunct Jupiter. Yay! Again, so we get two shots at that. I'm pretty sure it is. I will check that.
Yeah, the sun is with Jupiter within 5 degrees, I think.
Yeah, it's pretty close. Trine to Pluto. Hang on, is that right? Yes, trying to Pluto. Yep. So that's interesting, an interesting unfoldment from the little semi-square that we have at the new. So work with it. It will develop. And sextile Uranus, lots of just planets in Pisces. Like this is such a big Pisces vibe going on. Yeah, so Mercury, Jupiter, Neptune, Sun all huddling up in Pisces. And that's... Is that little semi-square still going? It is on for the sun, not for the moon as well. Any thoughts about that? You had a few things to say about the full moon.
Oh, yeah. I mean, so many things. I mean, the first thing that strikes me is that it's being ruled by Mercury in Pisces. And it wasn't the sun that's close to Jupiter. It's Mercury that's close to Jupiter. It's like applying within like 4 or 5 degrees. And, you know, Mercury, Pisces is the sign of Mercury's so-called detriment and fall. It's also a mute sign, the water signs. And it feels like whenever Mercury is in Pisces, I think that's one of the reasons we have so many poets with Mercury in Pisces, like Audre Lorde and Maya Angelou and Aurora Levens Morales. These are just some poets that come to mind. And then and musicians and artists of other kinds, like I think Yoko Ono has Mercury in Pisces as well. But Mercury in Pisces often I find has to do with expressing the inexpressible, finding ways to articulate what cannot be put into words or really rational linear thought. It's like something bigger or something else needs expression. So this is the place where I think, like, because it's a full moon, it's like what's coming into visibility, what's coming into expression. It's like there's something here that needs to be expressed that cannot be put into words, that can't be put into that linear logic. And maybe part of what that is that needs to be expressed is related to this Pluto story, because now, whereas that was from the way that I was looking at it, the new moon, that was just a thing that was happening kind of simultaneous to the new moon. Now at the full moon, the sun and moon are both aspecting Pluto at that point. So it's like that Pluto story is really getting pulled in to the full moon. So it starts to feel like, if I start to make a story with this, it's like the new moon, there's this like uncovering and digging down into what's been hidden or what's been abandoned or what's been buried or suppressed in some sense. And it might be those very things that are then coming to expression at the time of the full moon, but they might be things that we don't know how to say. We don't know how to put it into words. We don't know how to say these things out loud, maybe for the first time ever. And so then what are the other forms of expression or articulation that we can be exploring during this full moon? That's some of the ways that I'm thinking about the relationship between the new moon and the full moon and how the Pluto story gets pulled in and and they're being ruled by Mercury, and Mercury doing really amazing things in Pisces, but those amazing things very rarely being related to this kind of like logical, rational, linear approach to knowledge or communication.
It's very symbolic, isn't it? Yeah. Like it's very symbolic. So you might see a movie or hear a song that just hits that chord that brings in the Pluto and expresses that. Because it's tight, like it's so tight in this story, yeah. But you know, it's ease, that easy flow. So, you know,
exactly, like there's something opens up there.
Yeah. And you don't, I think you can welcome it or be okay with whatever is revealed at the time. Or yeah, just getting into a sense of one's own power, I think, with Pluto too, that takes a lot of energy to push away. If you're pushing it away, if you embrace it, you release energy that you were using to repress it, or yeah, you just, you accept that energetic part of yourself or that resource that I think Pluto is, that hidden resource. Like it's your personal atomic power plant. If you know, it's like unlimited energy. So it'll be interesting to see, just note around that time, how that might reveal to you. What vehicle that comes to you in. Definitely help the universe to help you by, go to a gallery or listen to a poet or read something like Rumi, you know, like a spiritual poet as well, that can really does strive to open those doors. Or music, you know, songwriters, lyricists are, even though it's very simple, often they just get it, don't they? And they, you know, sit in the bathtub and cry. Why not? I've done it. So, yeah, I think that one could be a good release as well, in a really positive way. I like that. That's looking really good. Anything else to say about the moons before we move on?
No, I think that gives some things for people to work with. Mm. And then there's, you know, there's some other astrology happening during this month that we probably want to give some
headlines,
talk through just a little bit. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, let's get to the headlines. So of course, Pisces season starts on February 18 as the month, as the sun comes through. I'll just run through the ingresses. Then there's the new moon on March 2nd. Mars enters Aquarius on March 6th. Venus enters Aquarius on March 6th. It's a photo finish, so we'll be talking more about that. March 9, then Mercury enters Pisces, and the full moon's on the 18th, and Sun enters Aries on March 20. So the Venus and Mars, do you think that's the headline for the month? Or
I think it's one of the two for me. I mean, in addition to the lunations. Yeah, the Mars-Venus story, because they make their first conjunction like right before the Sun goes into Pisces on February 16th. And this is only happening, I mean, for folks, for the astute astrology listener out there, Venus moves much faster than Mars. This is actually very odd that, or it doesn't always happen this way, that Mars overtakes Venus. It's only because Venus just stationed direct and is still moving rather slow that Mars overtakes Venus in this first conjunction. And then as Venus builds speed over the next several weeks following that, between February 16th and March 6th, they're moving really within a degree of one another for several weeks. So there's this very tight kind of dance or tango between Mars and Venus as they move through Capricorn. And then the day they arrive in Aquarius is their second conjunction on March 6th. And that the weeks in between, there's this whole story unfolding between their proximity to one another. And so part of the ways that I'm thinking about that, that gets initiated in the first conjunction, that kind of gets resolved in the second conjunction, is Venus draws us towards connection and intimacy and relationships and pleasure. But Mars can drive us towards things like conflict or separation or division. And so there's this kind of like push and pull dynamic to the Venus-Mars journey through Capricorn into Aquarius, this kind of like, are we together? Are we not together? And that could show up in terms of like literal relationship dynamics. And it also could also show up in terms of the other things that are represented by Venus and Mars in your particular chart. But this sense of like coming together, pulling apart, coming together, pulling apart. And if I had to inflect it a little bit in terms of something that's like, I don't have the sense that this is going to be the easiest part of the astrology of the year. Like whenever I think back to a lot of the ancient or some of the ancient astrologers, how they talk about connections between Venus and Mars. And I'm thinking about people like Vettius Valens and Firmicus Maternus and Dorotheus of Sidon. When Venus and Mars are together, they use words like controversy and rivalry and fickle and being wronged by relationships or reviled by certain friendships. They use words like debauchery, but not in a way that's always satisfying, that like it harms you in some sense. It damages your reputation. I think it's actually Dorotheus who literally says disgrace because of sexual intercourse. And so I'm just thinking about in this kind of tug of war, push and pull quality between Venus and Mars, there's a lot of erotic charge in that, that kind of like, I want something and it's right there, but like, oh, they pull away and like, and I want them back. And it's like that kind of, you know, that charge that builds when you can't quite have the thing you want. And that can be really exciting. And it can also turn a little toxic sometimes. Like I'm thinking as I was looking at this, I don't know if you're watching the show Euphoria on HBO Max, but literally, I mean, for listeners out there, this dynamic reminds me of literally every relationship in that show, which is like people pursuing relationships or sex or intimacy that ultimately is not good for them, that might actually be bad for them, might be self-sabotaging in some way. And so as we're moving through this period, that would be something that I would just invite people to pay attention to. Again, it may or may not be literally a sexual dynamic in your life. It might be related to other parts of your life, depending on your particular chart. But just notice where you feel, or if you feel, this kind of impulsive, compulsive pull towards something that you really want that you can't quite reach, and the ways in which that may or may not be ultimately satisfying for you. Because after this second conjunction between Venus and Mars, then Venus moves into some challenging condition. Venus is then in between Mars and Saturn for, I think it's until March 28th. So after the end of Pisces season. And in ancient astrology and Hellenistic astrology, that was the condition known as enclosure. And it's actually when you're enclosed between the challenging planets, between Mars and Saturn. And so it can feel like being stuck between a rock and a hard place. It can feel like a lot of restriction or limitation, or just being told no, being refused. And that could be specifically to the things related to Venus, which are things like intimacy and connection and pleasure and relationships. So if that wasn't the where this all goes, I maybe wouldn't necessarily read a Venus-Mars kind of sustained Venus-Mars conjunction like that, or moving close together for those weeks necessarily in like a challenging way. But because we can see how it resolves in this even much more challenging experience, I would just invite people to notice where they're feeling those dynamics at play and then make intentional choices, even if it means not doing something that you feel like you really want to do, because you recognize it might not actually be in my best interests to do that. So that's a big part of the story. That's not the only story going on in Pisces season, but that's the one that catches my eye the most. And then there's some beautiful Jupiter stuff to kind of balance it out, I think.
Absolutely. It's interesting. Venus conjuncts Pluto too, just before it moves into there. So there's definitely some, I don't know if you'd say heavier, but more maybe the intense aspects to this one. I like the idea of Mars driving Venus, like, you know, the pursuit of desire.
Yeah.
But then you bring in the Pluto and the Saturn to the story, that's like, oh, okay. That's interesting.
Let's see where that goes.
Let's see how that goes. Yeah, exactly. During Pisces season. So I agree. Just like, keep a conscious eye on things and awareness, and you get to choose. I guess with the Saturn, you know, you can invite that in and apply that boundary yourself. Yeah. Because if you don't apply it, maybe you'll experience it by someone else applying it, and you're trying to be Venus Mars and they're being Saturn, and that's not much fun. So owning your own boundaries and restrictions that are healthy for you as well. And perhaps grounding it, like using the Saturn to ground and make something tangible as well in terms of the artistic side of how that could be. Certainly that's good for going out dancing. The Mars with Venus, doing some dancing like lessons where you have a couple
structure,
and structure, a structured specific learn the tango. I'd love to learn the tango. Yeah, bring the structure in. That's a good way to look at it. That's a positive. Or maybe it will be bought in for you if you don't.
Yeah. I mean, and just to like balance some of that a little bit is that Mars is exalted in Capricorn and Venus is in its own triplicity in Capricorn. Mm. So it does seem like there's potential for this to, we do have the resources to resolve this. It's not like, it's not the most challenging thing we could see in the sky. There are ways, there are indications that a supportive or positive resolution is possible. So yes. I love the thinking of like, so let's see where this goes. Oh, Saturn comes into the story. How could we work with the Saturn part of the story with intentionality? And as you're saying, like bringing in the boundaries or the structure, it's like, that's part of the gift of astrology is like, we can see where this story goes and we can see like, so then what would be the resources that would help this maybe be a little bit more functional along the way as we're approaching there?
Yeah. How was it expressing? And then how else can we work with that? Because that energy wants to come through, but maybe we've got options with it, you know.
Exactly.
It is what it is, but then we've got options, surely.
Exactly. Because like ultimately we're still in Pisces season, which like, let's go back to the beginning of the show, is about expansive possibilities. Mm-hmm. So it's like there's a lot of opportunity here, even if there might be some like choices or even hard choices that we have to make. You're not locked in. It's not like there's only one possibility at play. That's not the theme or the story of this particular season. And then that, for me, that gets accentuated on March 5th when we have the Jupiter conjunction with the Sun, which is in, especially the medieval astrology described as a condition of Kazemi, or in the Hellenistic astrology of being in the heart of the Sun. And it's like it's one of the most beneficial places a planet can be. And it's for that moment, for the most majority of Pisces season, really, I think it's the whole time the Sun is in Pisces, Jupiter is not visible. It's in a condition called under the beams of the Sun. And usually when a planet is under the beams, what that means is we can't see it up in the sky. It's so close to the Sun that the light of the Sun, you know, like in the same way that you can't see stars during the daytime, because there's so much light from the Sun, when a planet is that close, we can't see it. And oftentimes that can be a condition where a planet is made less effective or even depleted in some way. But the ancients also had this doctrine that they called a planet being in its chariot. So when a planet is in its own domicile, especially, it's protected in some sense, or it's resourced to survive that experience. And the way, and Venus and Jupiter is in its own domicile in Pisces. So even though it's under the beams of the Sun this whole period, it's also in its domicile, which is really good. That gives it the resources to get through this period of invisibility. Yep. And then on March 5th, it goes into the heart of the Sun, which is a period of renewal. It's a period, it's almost like a rebirth in the cycle for Jupiter, because then Jupiter will move into being a morning star, which is actually its preferred relationship to the Sun, according to sect. It won't become visible until around March 25th. So after the Sun moves into Aries, but Jupiter is being renewed. It's being refreshed. It's being revitalized in this period. And that's going to be really good, I think really excellent for the Pisces and Sagittarius parts of our charts. So if you know your chart, if you're listening and you know your chart and you know like, oh, that's where my Pisces is, that's where my Sagittarius is, this renewal moment for the Sun, for Jupiter, kind of almost like, I think of it as like two like monarchs or like royalty kind of coming together in a congress with one another and pooling their resources. And that's sort of what then gets distributed out to these Pisces and Sagittarius areas of our chart. So even though we have this Mars, Venus, Pluto story unfolding, Venus moving into enclosure, there's also this really gorgeous moment of rebirth and revitalization for Jupiter as it makes the conjunction with the Sun literally one day before the second Venus-Mars conjunction. So these are overlapping stories. This is part of the reason I wanted to bring this in. It's not like this, like we have the Venus-Mars thing and then the Jupiter story happens. They're actually overlapping in different areas of our charts, different areas of our lives.
And it feels like quite limitless and very well resourced. Absolutely.
Yes.
And a mini
and moment. This conjunction is happening in Jupiter's bounds as well. So it's like just lots of good stuff happening for Jupiter. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but just like, when you said well-resourced, it's like even more well-resourced.
Even more, because of the bounds. So that's an opportunity transit. So definitely mark that in the diary.
Absolutely.
And do some manifesting. Yep. Set your intentions for that cycle. If it's aspecting a personal planet, like what area of life is it? Call in what you want.
Yeah,
absolutely. I love that. I think that's a real highlight and feels like a mini peak unicorn moment to me.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. All right. So time is ticking. So we're going to move on to Michael has suggested this month's nonprofit, and it is the Transgender, Gender Variant and Intersex Justice Project. So that's TGIJP and you can find them at tgijp.org. And it's an advocacy and support organization for incarcerated and formerly incarcerated, transgender, gender variant and intersex people. Their work is important because according to Lambda Legal, nearly 1 in 6 transgender people in the United States have been to prison. And for Black transgender people, it's 1 in 2, which is the highest rate of incarceration for any demographic group in the country. That's really extreme.
Mm-hmm.
Like you it wouldn't, is. It's one of those statistics you would not believe until you saw it. You wouldn't think that would be the case. So
indeed.
Yeah.
So yeah. And actually there's a fantastic, this isn't where I found out about TG. I've been supporting TGIJP for, I don't know how many years, but it's not where I found out about them, but there's an excellent documentary about their former executive director, Miss Major Griffin Gracie, which is called Major with an exclamation point. And you can learn so much about, it's really about her life, but also like half the documentary is also about this organization that she has been leading and directing for so many years as a formerly incarcerated Black transgender woman, also disabled, living in the United States. And we're living in this moment right now. If people want to learn more and just like hear some of these stories, like, as you said, like it's one thing to like read the statistic, but it's like, it's another thing to hear person after person after person talking about not only their experiences of being criminalized as a transgender person in the world, just trying to survive, but also the relentless violence that happens within the penitentiary system, within the prison industrial complex. And we're living in a moment where they're a shocking moment that even Angela Davis was saying in a presentation a couple, maybe that was just last week. Time is weird. I'm like, who could have foreseen that in 2022, we'd be living in a moment where words like prison abolition were in the headlines on the New York Times. It's like the prison abolition movement has been going on for decades. And who would have foreseen that we'd be living in a moment where it was getting such prominent mainstream conversations around it? And as part of that movement, I think it's really important that we take care of those who are most impacted by these violent systems. And TGIJP does that work in a way that I think is profoundly intersectional and feminist, by which I mean TGIJP centers the needs of people who are living at the intersections of multiple axes of oppression, people who experience oppression and violence because of their gender, because of their sexuality, because of their race, because of their class location, and because of the ways they're criminalized within the legal system. And those people are not only the folks who are being served by the organization, they're also the people leading the organization. And that is crucial because so often in this kind of like left-wing savior politics, it's like people wanting to like go help people, but not actually share power with them. And these are the folks who have actually, the trans folks, the intersex folks, the gender variant folks, and especially folks of color who've gone through incarceration experiences through jails and prisons, they actually know what's needed. They lived it. They understand it. Mm-hmm. And so having those people in leadership positions is one of the reasons that I feel really good about supporting that organization. I think they're modeling what intersectional feminism looks like in practice in a really clear way.
Yep. And also what I was going to say earlier in things to do in Pisces season is walk a mile in someone else's moccasin, stand in someone else's point of view. So you can, listen to someone else's story and their perspective, because if you've never lived it, you've got no idea that, you know, things are going on in society that affect people so extremely for, you know, ridiculous arbitrary reasons at the end of the day, but it's extreme. And I think Pisces season is, you know, if any, the time to do that.
Yeah.
And maybe that's where we can bring some of that generosity of Jupiter in Pisces as well, and Neptune, and that, you know, it's a limitless compassion and empathy for a start. Yeah. And maybe their little semi-square is like, yeah, but what are you going to do about it? What are you going to do about it?
Yep.
Yeah. Because it's the system. It's all about the system and the rules.
And power, and how power operates on and through us. And very specifically how power, I mean, we're talking about Pluto here for folks listening.
Absolutely.
The Pluto bit of like the concentration of power, how it undermines us, how it can subvert our livability and drag us into situations or experiences where we're disempowered. And what is that if not the prison industrial complex?
So absolutely. Like,
I love that you're making this connection back to the limitless empathy and compassion. And yeah, I hope folks look up tgijp.org and read more about the organization. I hope folks find the Major documentary about Miss Major Griffin Gracie and just hear the stories and see the faces and really allow yourself to feel with folks who've endured these immense experiences of harm and violence at the hands of these systems.
Yeah. Yeah. Prison industrial complex, just hearing that is in our times, even the thing to me, that's crazy. That's, you know, that's that larger system within a system that supports it. That it's the big deal.
Totally.
Well.
I mean, like, we don't have time for me to go off on a whole lecture of about the privatization of prisons and the ways in which prisons are part of a larger system of control that affects primarily already marginalized populations. But that's the short version. Is like these are very intentional systems that have been engineered over hundreds of years in order to disempower those who are already marginalized and to reassert the authority and power of those people who are already the most privileged within the existing social systems.
Yeah, like it's just moved. And it makes me think it is a relevant topic for Pisces season, just thinking of the house correlation the 12th and losing autonomy, basically, you know, prisons and places where you don't have control. On the positive, going to a monastery so that you can experience oneness and not have distraction. But yeah, unfortunately, it's also this sort of situation. So something to be aware of as well. So that's pretty much it for the headlines, do you think? There's opportunity transits. There's lots of sextiles. There's only two squares, a few awesome conjunctions and a few... We'll see how conjunctions Venus, Pluto, Venus, Saturn, there is that. But I think a really interesting month and lots of opportunity this month generally. It's got a pretty good vibe. So I didn't pick out one particular day, but I think around the new moon is quite lovely.
I agree.
Yeah. And so now we get to our takeaways. So key takeaway. Did you have a key takeaway, Michael?
I mean, the big ones, I think, are like this softening into expansive possibility, spending time with art and other forms of expression that exceed language and linear thought, that finding ways of articulating or expressing things that might feel impossible to say by exploring other ways of expressing them feel like some of the big themes, especially if you're doing any sort of like deep excavation work in your relationship dynamics, in your own relationship to desire and pleasure, the things you're unearthing, and then finding ways to bring those things into expression. And then the kind of big takeaway around the Jupiter Kazemi and this kind of reset of a new cycle related to the resources that are available to the Sagittarius and Jupiter parts of our lives, that there's parts of our lives that are becoming very well resourced right now. And that's getting particularly emphasized with the start of the new solar cycle synodic cycle between the sun and Jupiter this month. Those are my big takeaways.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that. And I like that. Well-resourced. I like that. I just wrote, you've got to believe it before you see it.
Oof, I love that. Yes.
Just boil down the Pisces. Yeah. I also have that feeling again of like, get into your unleash your inner artist, unleash your empathy. You know, just look at where your barriers are for that and why, that they're the two things, you know, be nebulous, like allow yourself to expand. So monthly mantra. Do you have a monthly mantra?
What I thought of was, I am already more than the limited and limiting categories I've been given.
Yes.
And we could all find more of ourselves in that. Like, even if it's just throughout the month, maybe once a day, coming back to that thought of, I'm already more than the limited and limiting categories I've been given.
Become aware of the edge and just step over it and see what
exactly.
That's like.
Right over that edge.
Mine is, I easily receive the information I pick up and trust my inner voice first. You know, the psychic receptive side of Pisces.
And the trusting the inner voice, so important.
Important. Yes. That sensitivity picks up on so much, but we're so taught not to respect it. But, you know, times have been changing, which is really great. And I find when I do listen to that, like, I've got five planets in Sagittarius. It's very like, it's intuitive, but there's a rational side that has, it squares my Mars in Pisces. And I do feel like that's been one of the hugest lessons of my life, is that that intuitive knowledge, always correct, always there. It's actually loud. Like, I hear people say that still quiet voice. I'm like, it's not quiet. That thing is not quiet. You just like push away hard. So when I trust that and don't even check in to see if it's right with, say, someone that's being dodgy, you know, everything rolls out well. The person will admit to being dodgy, or just things will go right because I'm in the flow. Like, I think if you question it, you just missed the flow.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it's a flow, very Pisces. So there is that. Yes. Listen to your inner voice, practice listening to it, go to like, do some exercises, like psychic exercises to learn to trust it and listen into the tells. So coffee table time. What's on your coffee table, Michael? What do you need? You will have a pile, huge pile.
Exactly. As I was saying before we started recording, my moon is in Gemini. So I'm always reading like 10 books at the same time and kind of going between them. But this week, the four or five that I've been focusing on or rotating through the most is, the first one is Undrowned, Black Feminist Lessons from Marine Mammals by Alexis Pauline Gums, which is an interspecies meditation on the wisdom of marine mammals and what they teach us about survival and social justice. That actually, and I could go into like, you know, I could explain what the book is about, but just go read it. That's the one at the top of my stack right now. And then I've been reading this fun little book that came out a while ago. I think it was like the early 2000s, called Under One Sky, edited by Raphael Nasser, with contributions from 12 different astrologers using different techniques, all reading the same chart. So you get a bunch of different perspectives and really how different astrologers from Hellenistic astrology, from evolutionary astrology, from modern psychological astrology, from medieval astrology, how they all practice their approaches and techniques looking at the same chart. It's just a really great kind of comparative analysis text. And Demetra George is in it, who's like maybe my all-time favorite astrologer and teacher. And then maybe the third one I'll mention, it's not the only thing I'm reading right now, is I've been digging into a book by Gemma Gray called Traditional Witchcraft, A Cornish Book of Ways, which is a collection of historical and contemporary Cornish witchcraft traditions. Because most of my ancestors come from the British Isles and Cornwall specifically. And so for me, reading this book is a way of kind of reaching toward the kinds of traditions that my people might have practiced. I've been a witch for a long time, but this is the first time I've like really explored regionally within the kind of larger UK regionally. What are some of the things that were practiced in the places where I know my ancestors were?
And the ancestor thing, connecting with, it's kind of Pisces, isn't it? And it's really come into awareness for many more people the last few years. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not reading anything because I'm writing like a demon at the moment.
Yes.
But I have books to share, as always, in Pisces season. I just love that book, Neptune, by Liz Green. I think it really, I felt like it really took me there into the Neptunian vibe. And I'll share The Healing Power of Sound, Recover from Life-Threatening Illness Using Sound, Voice and Music by Mitchell L. Gaynor. And MD, so this guy uses, found his way into using sound in his practice. He's an oncologist and he was having amazing results. So he was able to embrace it and not reject it. And he's written this book about it. And I think it's really interesting because I love that idea of vibration. Again, we're going into the subtle realms in Pisces season. And so there's that one. And now what have we got coming up? Let's start with you. What have you got coming up to share with us?
Well, at the time we're recording this, I am fully booked for consults through the end of March. But if folks want to book a reading with me, you can join my mailing list on my website, which is michaeljmorris.co. And I'll be sending out the announcement of when I start booking again for April, May, June, sometime in like the middle of March. I have an astrology guide for 2022 that's available for purchase and immediate download on my website. So if people, you know, like the way that I talk about astrology, it's a 2-hour guide, just overview of some of the big stories, sky stories that are unfolding this year. So that resource is available for folks. I'm going to be part of an event on February 13th, which will be right before this comes out, or right around this time this comes out, called Erotic Ecologies and Embodiment, which is going to be a public conversation with Mary Grace Allardyce, Alcestis Demek, and Annika Austin, and myself. And I think by the time this episode comes out, it should be available for free online. So just check on the resources page on my website.
Excellent. They all sound awesome. And just check out other things Michael has got out there. They're pretty cool.
Thanks.
So Astrology University has for going into Pisces season on February 23 to March 20, forecasting 201 synthesizing timing techniques. So that is with Tony Howard and Kelly Surtees. We'll take our timing techniques a step further as we learn ways to integrate multiple techniques in practical ways for powerful forecasting. Speaking of forecasting, you'll learn methods for blending transits and progressions, how to incorporate solar arcs, and how to share this material with clients in a way that inspires them and gives them a sense of agency about their coming opportunities and life choices. That sounds like a definite, if that's amazing. Where you're at with astrology, very positive and practical, super practical. And synthesizing is, I think, where people do get tripped up. Mm-hmm. Retrograde planets, February 23 to March 20. So that is with Saffron Rossi and Tony Howard, also a great team. So yeah, retrograde planets really capture the headlines, but what does it all mean? So you'll learn that in this one. February 23 to March 20, the outer planets, Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto, and that's with the amazing Jessica Murray and teaming up with Tony Howard again as well. Great dynamic duos this month, I see. So that's for 4 weeks. So I'm liking that they're doing the longer running ones, so you can really get into the nitty gritty with them. And then February
and the co-teaching just feels very that Pisces great. Double-bodied sign thing. Yes. Of like, let's multiple teachers. Let's do have more than one teacher.
Yes, exactly. I like that. So midpoints is February 23rd, when the obvious is hiding in plain sight. And that's with Alejo Lopez, A-L-E-J-O. Midpoints, interesting. I don't use them so much, but I've watched talks with people using them and they look really, really interesting, people that know their midpoint stuff. Mm-hmm. So get into that. March 21st, then we're getting into the next season. So I'll leave it at that. They look great. So, of course, go to astrologyuniversity.com, the events page, and they're all laid out there. And you can just register through there. Personally, I've got 1 day open for readings. Love doing readings and chatting with people live, especially because most of my work is pretty solo in the quiet writing, as I said, with looking down the barrel of a deadline at this point.
Expansive possibilities.
Yes, I can achieve the miraculous. Yes. Thankfully, this month is supporting that. And also just the readings at this point. And after further into March, I'll be more available.
Mm-hmm. Amazing.
So thank you so much, Michael, for joining us and sharing your amazing insights and ability to put them into words. I love that. Another academic, two in a row we've had, and we've been so blessed with our co-hosts. And thank you, everyone, for tuning in again. Have a wonderful Pisces season. Enjoy the magic. Avoid the pitfalls. And this has been Vanessa Montgomery, and stay cosmic. Bye for now.
Thanks for tuning in to the Astrology University podcast. Study astrology online with some of the great astrologers of our time at www.astrologyuniversity.com, where we offer webinars, online classes, and virtual summits to bring you inspiration, connection, and insight through the study of astrology. Take good care, and we'll see you next time.